Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick on the show today. We're excited because it's pretty much the start of earnings season. We got a few coming in. Citi came in just moments ago. JP Morgan already. We've had Domino's already. So we're going to talk about the early theme that we are seeing from this earnings season. We're going to recap yesterday's action as well. HMNY had a we talked about that on yesterday's show. It had another crazy and eventful day. So we'll talk about that. And we'll, of course, answer your questions from the chat. Two guests on the docket today, Mark Chicken. Will join us at 8:15 to give us his thoughts on the upcoming earnings season. And Richard Lester will join us at 8:35. He is a director of strategy and risk at DRS Markets, formerly the head of the equity trading desk at Nomura. Places worked at places like Citi and Barclays and Merrill Lynch before that. So a great, great guy as well. Joel, what's doing in the markets?
We're in the red a little bit here by 475. Your all-time closing high from Wednesday, 5250, is your pre-market high. We're keeping an eye on that. On the downside, 47 a quarter. Don't have much there. Wednesday's low is down at 44 and a quarter. That's buffeted by Thursday's low as well at 43.75. So let's call 25.44. That's your major support on the downside. Moving over to the gold market, starting to move up after hours yesterday and just kind of kept on going. The high, 12.99.80. This trying to bust through into the 1300s. Silver, let's take a look at silver. That's back above 17, up a couple pennies, or up 13 cents at 1726. And crude, can we get a trend out of crude here? Because it seems like it's red one day and green the next. Still over $50. But let's bring in Dennis. And is this the same Dennis Dick that was quoted in Reuters yesterday?
Well, I was in Reuters yesterday. Actually, I think it was the day before.
Day before?
I was just saying, you know what my quote was? What was my quote, Joel? Did you read it?
Yeah, yeah. Fear of missing out.
Yeah, I said the only fear in this market is the fear of missing out. So, and that seems to still be the case. We've said that on the show multiple times. I guess they like that quote because Reuters printed it in there. So that was actually, I think, 2 days ago and we're still making all-time highs. Yes, and today we're down here a little bit, and so we're pulling back a bit. But, I mean, still, there's still no fear out there. When you analyze and you look at this market, there's no fear, Joel. Even though we're down 4 points and people say, whoa, what's with the crash? Well, there's still no fear. This isn't fear.
Not even a triple top? Does that not even concern you at all? 52,
is anything, 50? Is anything really concerning here in this market? Really?
That they're selling stocks off. Good.
You can find so many reasons to be bearish, and we can continue to do it, but they all just go and you know, the biggest one that I'm worried about is North Korea. You haven't heard from this guy in a while. He's, you know, basically ready for a nuclear war over there, and the market doesn't care. We just say, you know, we're still here. We're still, you know, and doesn't care. And like I said, this market is so resilient. It seems like even if, you know, we do go into a nuclear war, they'll say, well, that's good for the economy. War. You know, that's what got us out of the Great Depression back in the day. So just the way everything is interpreted, it's so difficult to be short this market. Eventually, there will be a time when we will get a pullback. Eventually, I'm telling you, there will be a bear market again. But everything at all-time highs here right now, why is this the time? I'm not going to try to call that time. I'm going to wait till I actually get some signals that are signaling that we're going into a bear market. And I don't see those signals yet.
I will tell you when we also have another signal. I was going over some statistics with Spencer over show attendance. And you know what? In January, February, and March of 2016, that's when people were tuning in because there was chaos in the markets and volatility. And, you know, now everyone's just sitting fat and happy, just, you know, checking their 401k at the end of the month.
Oh, yeah.
And, seeing it grow. So there's nothing to worry about. But we're starting a very exciting part of the year now, right? Q3 earnings season.
Yeah, and we've seen a theme, and Citigroup's trying to break that theme right now, just as I speak. But so far, we've had Costco report, we've had JP Morgan report, and the Costco is really from the last earnings season, but it was last week, so we'll bring it into there, into this theme. With JP Morgan and Domino's Pizza, all of these companies reported pretty good earnings. What do they have in common? They all sold off on pretty good earnings reports. So Costco, we already know. We already covered that. We got DPZ at 7:30 this morning. And we got JP Morgan earlier this morning, too. Now, JP Morgan has turned to the green now thanks to Citigroup. Citigroup just came out and is actually lifting a little bit in the pre-market. I want to go to Domino's Pizza first, and then we'll cover these banks because this is an interesting theme that's been developing.
$1.27 versus $1.23. Sales of $643.64 versus $627.35 million. So a beat on the sales and a beat on the EPS. Also a $1.25 billion buyback.
Lots of good things said there. Domino's Pizza kind of just traded flat, but if you look at just right after the report, and then about a couple minutes later, sellers started to come in, and now sellers have come in big time here in Domino's Pizza. What has it done ahead of the report? It's ran straight up into the report, so they needed to blow it away. I guess they didn't really blow it away, even though you know the numbers seemed pretty good. It's down $11 here. Costco is the same story. It ran straight up into the report. Reported okay quarter. Maybe didn't blow it away enough, and they killed it. So you're seeing that Domino's Pizza too. A theme that continues there from the last report.
All right, let's look at Domino's. Your pre-market low, 195.01. We're a clear $3 above that, 197.80. That's the highest point since you hit 195.01. Nice run into the report. Let's go to the dailies. You got a little congestion here at 195. We'll keep an eye on 193.89. That was your low back on September 27th. So if you do take out the pre-market low, there is one potential stopping point, and then just look for the two other daily lows. Worst case scenario, 190 even. That was a low, 190.36. That would be, I wouldn't want to say worst case scenario, but you have a daily low to lean on at 190.36.
And then we just heard from JP Morgan around 7 o'clock, and the stock popped. And then it dropped. And the numbers were good. But again, we said this yesterday on the show, last earnings season, the financials reported pretty good numbers, and they hit them on the good numbers. That's what they did to JP Morgan here this morning, too. Spencer, details.
$1.76 versus $1.65 is the EPS sales of 26.2 versus $25.2 billion. So again, beat and a beat.
Beating a beat, not good enough, though. Stock has run up into the report, which we said yesterday. Stock's up 10% in the last week or last month here. So it needed to blow it away. I guess it wasn't good enough. Stock trading slightly down here in the pre-market, but like I said, it's trying to go green. Citi was just popping up to in the mid-75s off their report, too, so that was helping JP Morgan a little bit. But Citi's still not up that much here, and Citi's numbers were good, too.
Yep. That's your key, yep. Yeah, yeah, I was on mute. Relax. I was the old mute trick. City Q3 EPS $1.42 versus $1.32. Sales of 18.2 versus $17.9 billion. So a beat on the EPS by 10 cents and a beat on the sales.
And Citigroup got actually hit on this report too. So the theme was continuing. I actually traded down to the 73 handle. But they turned around and they bought this one. So maybe it's just a fade trade, fading that initial move. The initial move always seems to be wrong. News algo getting punished for whatever reason. Whatever they go with, the other goes the other way. And Citigroup, where did we get down to, Joel, just now? And we just reported it just 7:58, so 10 minutes ago.
73.50, that's your pre-market low. Bouncing back into the $75 handle, 75 and a quarter is your last print. So when you bounce off a low that hard, you have to respect it. Let's go to the daily charts. The daily charts, just under 73. You had a low there in Citigroup. That low was 72.91. So that's focusing on 73 here for support. Coming back on the upside, there's only one number and one number only. That's the high of the move, 76.02. See if you have any institutions that were lurking there 4 days ago to see what's happened in the pre-market. Ooh, not quite yet. So 76 and 73 on that. Moving over to JP Morgan, we're just keeping an eye on the all-time high, 97.64. I do see a after-hours print at 97.75. So 97.60, we almost got there on the pop, but returned back. Your pre-market low 96. I would use that on a target if I was so inclined to short the stock, which I'm not going to. And then you could see two lows just under 96 at 95.55 and also 95.46. So 95.50, your major support, major resistance, all-time high, 97.64.
Hard to get a feel on these. It's really chopping around. Like Citigroup dropped, then it popped. Now we're trading flat. JP Morgan popped, then it dropped. Now we're almost trading flat. We're down 30 cents there on the earnings. So after that wild range, I'll call it almost flat here. So it's tricky to figure it out here right now in the financial. So as more information comes in, as the 9:30 trade comes in, maybe we'll develop a theme. I would think these two stocks are probably going to move in sync or at least close together. And obviously watch all your other financials because they're all sitting there kind of flat right now too, trying to figure out, hey, where is the leaders going? You look at Bank America, it's down 8 cents. You look at Morgan Stanley, it's trading down, you know, 18 cents. They're just right there. So they're trying to figure out, Wells Fargo's up a little bit here in the pre-market. They're trying to figure out where they want to go.
Did we just get any news on AT&T here?
No, AT&T was last night. And AT&T had news last night, and they had guidance. And actually, it's just been leaking the entire pre-market here. Last night was trading down about 10, 15 cents on the guidance. I guess this morning, the people who came in and read the report did not like it. Spencer, give us the details on that guidance.
Well, yeah, they reaffirmed their outlook for the fiscal year and their free cash flow of around $18 billion. So they did say the natural disasters will impact earnings by about 2 cents per share, which is all I'm seeing as far as negative headlines.
That was last night. It was trading down a little bit last night on the report, but like I said, it continues to leak here this morning, big time here now, AT&T giving it back. And hey, you know, this is something that we've talked about on the show for a long time, is when you get these, you know, these things, these stocks, they go ex-dividend. They are weak afterwards, and we've called this one right too. Man, we've been calling some stuff right on the show here as of late. I mean, you know, we don't always get it right, but we got this one right too because AT&T was straight up ahead of the report, went ex-dividend on October the 6th, and it's been straight down ever since. If you actually shorted that day when ex-dividend, you could have got off over $39. It's now $37.30. Verizon hasn't really had that much response here, but it is trading down here right now in the pre-market in sympathy with AT&T. It's down about 40 cents there, but again, the highs, you know, the theme is there. Strong before the ex-dividend date, weak after. And, you know, they find a reason to do that.
I was eyeing this one. I had the order queued up. I was going to go out to, like, November, you know, like elite for me, November or December, the 38 puts. And they weren't that expensive. And then I just kind of didn't pull the trigger. I like to do things like 358, 359. And I just said, nah, we'll just, market's going up tomorrow. I can short it at higher prices. But man, oh man, maybe I'll turn. Well, Verizon's trading down 45 cents in sympathy too. I know we got a guest coming up here in a minute. Do we have any General Motors news? Because I see the same
thing. They are cutting the part of the Detroit workforce. What is it, Spencer? I saw it go by on the pro.
They're going to, a Detroit car factory. They're going to cut it, basically going to make it idle for 6 weeks, because
it's on weak demand,
slow demand. Yep.
Yeah. So when you get that, you know, weak demand here, stock's been running straight up. I mean, that's not what the market wanted to hear. So it's not surprising that the stock has given some back here this morning. Ford is down a little bit in sympathy as well. It's trading down about 11 cents, but GM, not having a good morning.
Pre-market low 44.50. GM just had one heck of a run, and I saw it even up, I believe, yesterday. How many consecutive days? Well, you had one red day in there. A lot of gaps to fill here. Under $43. We're nowhere near there now. Maybe let's see if we can find a place to short it. I'm not sure what yesterday's low is. Yesterday's low in the 45 handle, 45.08. So love to see it there in the fill that gap and a lower risk short, but GM finally get knocked down a little bit.
All right, 8:15 or 8:14, we're going to go grab our first guest real quickly. Mark Chaykin, founder of Chaykin Analytics. We'll be right back with Mark. Welcome back, everyone, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick, and we're on the line with Mark Chaykin. He is the founder of Chaykin Analytics. He is a 40-year vet of the market. He has seen it all. Mark, how's it going?
It's going well, Spencer. Welcome back.
Thank you. I was in California last time you were on the show. All right, let's get your thoughts on the market this morning. We've got Domino's reporting already. We had a couple of banks report, a couple of banks tomorrow. We were talking earlier about the early theme of the day seems to be that they're hitting good reports. Thoughts on the last hour or day's worth of trading?
Well, I think as we head into earnings season, and of course today starts the spate of earnings with the big banks reporting today and tomorrow, that we've got an overextended market that's been bid up based on the expectation of very, very good third quarter earnings reports, but not just earnings revenue beats. And that's what we're seeing here in the first couple of reports from JP Morgan Chase and Citicorp. Ironically, the initial reaction to the JP Morgan earnings, which were about 10 cents better than expected, was a sell-off of about 1% because people focused on trading revenues down. But now that's reversed and JP Morgan's trading unchanged, Citicorp's up. I think third quarter earnings are going to be better than expected. Analysts started cutting their estimates heading into earnings season beginning about 2 weeks ago. That's usually bullish, believe it or not. And so very positive about what we're going to see here in the next 4 to 6 weeks.
So you think that early action we were seeing this morning was just a result of people reacting to the lack of revenue from trading for the banks, which we saw last quarter as well?
It was a drop in revenue. I think more important is what came out of the Fed yesterday, namely that we're likely to see another interest rate hike in December. The markets have been sort of wavering back and forth between yes and no based on inflation or lack thereof. I think that an interest rate hike in December is great for the financials, all the way down from the large banks like Citicorp and JP Morgan to the small regional savings and loans and banks and thrifts. So I think we're setting up a very positive environment for the financial stocks heading into that December rate cut.
All right. Give us some other stocks that you're watching. We've got some, obviously, the banks today, but we've got a lot of earnings reports coming in the next few weeks. What's on your radar that you're watching specifically?
First and foremost, I'm watching tech stocks. We got a tell on tech earnings when Micron reported about 3 weeks ago. Much better, really a blowout quarter, much better than expected earnings. Based on that strong report from Micron, you saw some of the semiconductor equipment manufacturers that we've liked for over a year, Lam Research and Applied Material, spike up as well. So what's happened, in my view, is that the tech stocks that are due to report here in October have borrowed a bit from the positive earnings reports that are likely to come out. The way that translates into actionable advice or actionable game plan for traders is you're likely to see better than expected earnings in the tech sector, particularly in semiconductors, but you may see a sell on strength mentality since they've already borrowed. So what I'm starting to tell clients is earnings are going to be great. You're probably going to see a spike up. Good opportunity to take some money off the table. Tech has led the market for the last 12 months. It's the sector that's really put on the biggest gains. Although earnings are going to be great, I think from a trading point of view, spikes after a positive report, excellent spot to take some money off the table.
Hey, Mark, Dennis Dick, I just want to talk about one stock specifically here, Micron Technology, MU. It's really had a run here. In August, we were 28 bucks. We're now 41. We got up to 42. Stock does $1 billion stock offering. It gets slammed down to 40. The next day, it's right back up at 42 here again. I mean, that's just, you know, the definition of resilient. I actually didn't mind what they did with the money. They actually did the offering to pay off debt. So, you know, like I said, a lot of these companies do these buybacks when their stocks are at all-time highs. Here's one that's actually raising some money when their stock's at all-time high, using their stock high stock price to pay off some debt. What are your thoughts here on, you know, what Micron just did with the offering and your technical thoughts on MU?
Well, I think the company is brilliant. They're taking advantage of this huge run-up in the stock price. Remember, this stock was trading at about 16 a year ago to get some debt off the balance sheet. And I think the reason that it rallied, Jim Cramer mentioned on his show that there was huge institutional demand for this. That strikes me as a bit odd, given the fact that the institutions have been buying the stock all the way up. Micron's in a very volatile part of the electronics semiconductor business. The thing that's going for them is there's been a lot of consolidation in the segment of the business that they're in, which are memory chips. This has typically been a very cyclical business. The market is now telling you that this has become a lot less cyclical. I'm skeptical about that. There's always been a cycle in chips where there's overcapacity and then undercapacity. The thing Micron has going for it has been a lot of consolidation. So there are really only two big players in the segment right now. And so technically it looks brilliant, very overextended. Ultimately, you know, $1 billion or $1.2 billion worth of stock represents supply. The stock starts to sell off. You then have a lot of people who've now bought it at the high. Leading into that offering, everybody who owned the stock had a profit. Suddenly, if the stock corrects a bit, once the offering is absorbed, you've got potential sellers who are tired and looking to get out of the stock. Maybe they satisfied their brokerage commitments and know that they're going to get some new issue allocations. You know how Wall Street works. It's a one hand rubs the other. But in general, if you believe the trend is your friend, you want to stay with Micron. But I think now you've got to be looking for an exit strategy. How do I get out if it starts to break down? Or do I want to just sell it and take profits here up at the 42 level?
Jump over to the retail sector, one stock that was in the gutter last year. I mean, and if you listen to, you know, a lot of, you know, people in the media there when the stock was trading at $55 or $56, I'm talking Walmart, back in 2015, they were like, Amazon's eating their lunch and this company's in trouble. Now the exact opposite thing has happened a year and a half later. The stock is approaching all-time highs, and they're saying Walmart is going right head-to-head with them and doing very well in online. What are your thoughts here on the recent run-up, six-point run-up, in WMT?
Well, the underlying factors in our power gauge rating, our multi-factor model, have been bearish on Walmart, but it's obviously technically been very strong. I'm skeptical of the run-up. I do think that Amazon awoke a sleeping giant in Walmart. As you know, I put out a sell recommendation on Amazon at the 990,000 level. We took off our bearish put positions at 935. And so I think you've got dueling gunfighters here. This is like the gunfight at the OK Corral. By the way, that was over in about 9 seconds. The reason I know that, crossword puzzle answer in the New York Times yesterday, believe it or not. But I'm skeptical of what's going on here. You've got two 600-pound gorillas going after each other. I'm impressed by what Walmart's doing, and I think Amazon made a big mistake when they bought Whole Foods, because they opened the Walmart floodgates. So I would avoid both of those stocks. I think there are better places in retail that had turned around before Walmart. So Kohl's is a stock that we like. That's moved up nicely from the 40 level up to 46. We're starting to see a turnaround in stocks like Ralph Lauren, a much more high-end retailer. So I'm going to say avoid Walmart, but also avoid Amazon. Let these 600-pound gorillas fight it out. I think it's more likely to hurt Amazon than help Walmart in the long run. Interesting thing about Walmart, they announced their expansion plans. They're not going to open superstores. They're opening supermarkets. They're going to get into the food business. We all know that's a low-margin business. So I think this is an interesting time for retail. I'd rather look for the smaller specialty retailer stocks that have figured out the e-commerce strategy and are potential turnarounds like Kohl's, which we were able to catch just as it was moving back with the power gauge turning bullish.
Mark, you're giving a webinar later today on your blueprint for option and swing trading. I'll put the link in the chat. But tell us a little bit about your option strategy during earnings season.
Well, thanks for that question, because I think this is something that your listeners will really get some benefit out of. There's some opportunities in earnings season on both bullish and bearish stocks. On bearish stocks, there's the opportunity to buy an inexpensive put spread. And if you get yet another negative earnings surprises, because negative earnings surprises sort of come along with a bearish stock, you can make a lot of money very quickly. In the last earnings season, Seagate was an example of that, even though it's in the strong tech sector. On the bullish side, if you get an opportunity to buy into a stock that's sort of selling off into the earnings report with a pattern of positive earnings surprises, and that was the case with Micron, by the way, back 3 or 4 weeks ago, good opportunity to establish a long position. You're less likely to get that huge pop on the upside in the options. Now, one pattern that we've noted, and I've never seen anyone else comment on this, is stocks with a bearish power gauge rating. So translate that to downtrend for those of you who don't have Chaikin Analytics. Stocks in a downtrend typically rally into the earnings report. It's an odd phenomenon. You can call it a little bit of short covering and a lot of wishful thinking. That usually creates a great opportunity if you want to take a predefined risk in a put trade, either outright put purchase, or we prefer vertical put spreads, because you're getting the benefit of a contra move into some event that you think is going to reverse the stock. So I think earnings season is a time when people typically pull in their horns, they sit on their hands and say, I'll ride out the volatility and do something after earnings reports. I prefer to look for opportunities that have been doing poorly with a bearish rating in our model, because there's sometimes 100 to 300% opportunities with very limited risk.
Mark, I have just one question for you here. Keeping an eye on the average daily ranges here in the S&Ps, keeps coming down and coming down. That bodes well for a bull market, right? Low volatility. I just wondered, have you done any work as far as, like, you know, historical standards for average ranges? Because, you know, I'm looking at a 9-day average trading range here of 11 and a quarter. You know how historically low that is. Do you have any kind of indicator, you know, before that will give you some kind of indication that besides the VIX kind of tells you the day after, is there anything you see in this market that's going to lead to higher volatility?
Well, October is normally a period of higher volatility. That's usually because of, you know, the aftermath of a weak September and the fact that markets tend to see bear markets end in October, say 1987, 1997, 98, I think October of 08 when you had your first bottom, and then you get a big rebound coming out of it. I don't think you're going to see that this year. So people have been looking for a pickup in volatility just because October historically has shown that. I think you're going to be disappointed. We're in a very low volatility year based on patterns that go back 70 years. I'm going to go out on a limb, give you a prediction for 2018. When you've had a low volatility year like this, and there have been about five of them over the last 60 years, the drawdown the following year typically maxes out at 10%. So what does that tell me? It tells me, A, we're likely to get a strong fourth quarter, because when you come into the fourth quarter as strong as we've been in September and for the year, typically there's follow through. Low volatility markets don't trigger selling. You know, someone once said, you know, never sell a dull market short. And this is really a dull bull market by normal standards. But then looking ahead to 18, you say, okay, are we going to have a sort of damaging 2018? My answer is no. We haven't seen a 3% correction since Brexit or the November election in 16. So we probably will see more volatility in 18. I think the market's going to have to deal with the fact that a tax bill is unlikely to be passed. And that's not a bad thing, but there'll be some disappointment. But the bottom line is, if the max drawdown is in 2018 is roughly 10%, that's something that traders can live with. That's not a bear market. That's just a correction. And so I think as people come to realize low volatility is a good thing, not a bad thing, they're going to look ahead toward 2018 thinking, I think I can go in long and stay long and just be nimble if a correction comes.
And I mentioned Mark's webinar today. It's at 4:15 Eastern. Mark, you're hosting it with Larry McMillan, who's been on our show before. He runs optionstrategist.com. Again, I put the link in the chat, or you can go to shakenanalytics.com/webinars. I guess, Mark, before we let you go, we're getting a question in our chat. Are you for some specific names? I think that you were just talking about stocks that are weak heading into stocks that are weak rallying into earnings. Do you have any specific names? Someone in our chat is wondering.
Well, I'm watching Under Armour. A couple of brokerage firms upgraded it, looking for that to rally a bit. They've had a real string of negative earnings surprises. You know, these tend to come to an end at some point. And then I'm watching the energy stocks, which have had a huge run-up, but none of the power gauge ratings have turned bullish on these stocks. So I'm looking for opportunities to short energy into strength ahead of earnings reports. And then, of course, I'm looking at stocks like Amazon. If it can't get through 1,000, what does that mean? I might want to put on a put position there. And then some of the healthcare stocks, Anthem Health, which has been a big favorite of ours for the last year, failing to make a new high here, negative money flow, staying under our upper volatility band. So selected healthcare stocks, you know, with the turmoil that's going on in Washington now, Trump by executive order may be able to undo some of Obamacare, which wasn't really anticipated. You may see some healthcare stocks like Anthem Health and Centene report quarters that are not as good as expected. Again, the fact that they failed to make new highs here with the market at new highs is a red flag for me. So those are three places that I'm looking for potential short sales. I'm still primarily focused on the long side here. Anybody waiting for a big pullback has been frustrated, and that means this higher price is yet to come here in the fourth quarter. So perhaps the better opportunities are on the long side. One way to play that during earnings season, if you do get a spike up and then you consolidate for 3 to 8 days, that may be the time to get into these stocks, either with options or adding to positions. So this earnings season in the bullish camp, you may have to wait for a spike after a good earnings report, a pullback, and then there's your buying opportunity into year end.
All right. Mark Chaykin, he's the founder of Chaykin Analytics, giving us some great insight on how to play this upcoming earnings season. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. Great insight.
My pleasure. Talk to you guys in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
All right. Have a good one. 8:33 now, a couple more minutes till we actually grab our second guest. But guys, what did we miss while we were talking to Mark? Anything?
Not much. No? S&Ps are coming off that 47.25 level. I'm looking mid-range here at 25.49.75. Dennis, you want to try and sneak in another stock or two here before we have our next guest?
Quick imbalance look, because a lot of people like to listen to that. SQS Square is trading up. Full disclosure, I'm long some Square, too, and my trading a portfolio there. It got a positive rating, I believe, from, wow. Was it Oppenheimer, Spencer? SQ? Somebody mentioned
it. It was Oppenheimer.
Dennis, you're making me nervous. Oppenheimer. Will you sell that, please? You're making me nervous on this one. I mean,
how many hold Square? This has been a great one.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It keeps going. 8, 9.
Trend is your friend.
9 out of 10, 10 out of 11, 11 out of 12, 12 out of 13. Dennis, you got. I'm getting nervous here. Okay.
The trend is your friend. When these trends turn, though, they turn hard. So you got to be careful on something like that. That's a stock that can, you know, get ugly in a hurry on you. But, I mean, this is Dorsey. You know, we talk about Twitter all the time. This is a stock. This has been the one that Dorsey, you know, this hasn't been the moneymaker. I mean, Twitter's been sitting there. Square's up from $25 now up to $32.35 here in the pre-market in the last month and a half. So it has been an incredible run. If you're coming in now, probably late to the party here. But trend is your friend. If you're in it, I don't know. I'm riding.
And if you GBTC, I don't know how that's trading, but I got a text at 5:43 this morning from Jeff
Bitcoin.
Goldman.
How did you go to Bitcoin? Yeah. What did he say?
It was just, I wish I could put it up on my phone. It was just a picture of Bitcoin at 5,400, and it just, you know, from his montage. But you know what? GBTC's here is lagging a little bit. We've talked about the different factors in that. For that reason. But Spencer, you found a new guest for us here at 8:35. Who are you bringing on?
I did. His name is Richard Lester. He is currently the director of strategy and risk at DRS Markets. Prior to that, he was the head of equity trading at Nomura and Citi. So we're going to be right back with Richard Lester to give us his thoughts on this market. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick, and we're on the line with a new guest, Richard Lester. He is the Director of Strategy and Risk at DRS Markets over in the UK. Richard, how's it going today?
Going well, thank you very much. Earnings season kicking off, so there's a lot to look at and quite a lot to talk about.
Well, first, give us a quick summary of your background. How'd you get here?
Okay, well, my background is predominantly investment banking. I've been trading equities and equity derivatives for the best part of three decades, mainly out of Europe, with a focus on European financials, but some global stuff as well. And the last few years, I've diversified a bit into some other stuff. So I spent some time with a hedge fund, creating cross-product businesses. And now I'm helping DRS Markets launch itself in Europe as a retail broker.
All right. Give us your thoughts then on, we got some earnings today. We had JP Morgan, we've had Citi, we got a few tomorrow as well. We have a few next week as well, as far as the big banks are concerned. So give us your sort of opening thoughts here on the beginning of this earnings season, your initial thoughts.
I didn't expect the banks to move much on the numbers, and I don't. I think they're fine. They're a little bit weak in places, a little bit better than others, but the banks aren't here at the levels they're at the moment on earnings so much as on the macro outlook, the anticipation of steepening rates. And that's starting to concern us a little bit, purely with the inflation outlook that we're seeing coming through in the US. So I wouldn't expect fireworks from the earnings of the big banks this earnings season. I think they're a story for the global economy.
Okay, so then what are you expecting to happen then?
Well, a sideways move, as we're seeing in pre-market. I guess there's quite a few shorts out there, and we've certainly seen some activity in the options markets around earnings here with people anticipating movement. So that'll be a little bit painful. I mean, given these stocks have had substantial moves since the election last year, that's not a surprise that you're going to see some positioning into earnings at these levels that's slightly bearish. I wouldn't be a seller of them here aggressively at the moment.
Hey, you know, Rich, we occasionally have people on our show from the UK. When we do, we like to ask them how do you deal with trading hours, the US trading hours over across the pond?
It's not really a problem because, to be honest, for us, certainly from a personal standpoint and a business standpoint, you get most of your news around midday UK time as the US earnings report pre. And that's like a perfect time for us to digest the information and react to what's happening in Europe. Given that a lot of the earnings then come out after hours, we get the overnight window to look at them and react again the next morning. So it's almost like a win-win for us on how we want to work around that. Obviously, late in the day trading can be a little bit tiring, but for the most part, I find that the lunchtime session is quite interesting.
Okay, so what else are you sort of watching now? We talked about the banks a little bit. Are there other sectors or industries or just individual stocks that you have your eye on?
Yeah, more industries than individual stocks. So there's two things that we think are interesting that we're seeing people looking at and we think are interesting. One is this continued old economy, new economy rotation. You've got examples, again, of retailers, old economy retailers missing again today. I can see Jill is down 83% now pre-market. And you've got Amazon looking to expand again this morning in Brazil, hiring in Brazil. So I think that continued rotation, even though we've had substantial price moves in some of these stocks, I think that continues. I think people underestimate the way that continues to pull apart. The second thing we're really interested in is not so much cryptocurrencies as the blockchain itself and how the economy absorbs that and how companies absorb that. And we've seen stuff the last few weeks with banks and software companies trying to integrate as much blockchain technology as possible into future planning. So I think stocks like Oracle, SAP, IBM start getting interesting again. Some of the smarter banks that are picking up this technology, this is going to run. I couldn't tell you which cryptocurrencies are going to be the winners or losers, but the whole blockchain environment is certainly one for the future.
We were just talking about this just before you got on the show. Just give us, you know, your reasoning behind the blockchain, you know, and if you start seeing, you know, banks adopt this technology too, like we aren't seeing that over here. I mean, we've got Jamie Dimon, JP Morgan, you know, basically, you know, bashing, well, not so much the blockchain, but Bitcoin here. I mean, this is a threat to the banks, is it not, the blockchain?
Well, it is if they don't absorb it, but banks are actually in a position where they can absorb it. It's not an expensive thing for them to get in at the moment. I think, you know, you've had... I think there are over 800 cryptocurrencies now. So I'm not going to be calling Jamie Dimon right or wrong, and I don't know what the winners or losers are in this environment. But you know, you've had comments this week from the head of the IMF, Christine Lagarde, saying that, you know, it's not wise to dismiss virtual currencies. There is maybe a bubble in some of them, but it's not a bubble environment in how the entire situation is working out. It's disruptive technology, and disruptive technology will end up being totally different to what we anticipate it being, but it will still disrupt. We think some of these banks will jump on this very quickly and see the cost benefits that they can, it's productivity related again, that they can pick up from stripping out labor costs and replacing it with what is just basically a balance sheet adjustment for a transaction in the cryptocurrency.
Richard, tell us a little bit about your strategies or how you approach the market. Do you use options? Are you longer term? Are you swing trading? How exactly do you approach things?
I think the current environment really suits more of a buy and hold mentality. It has been for quite a while. I think technicals work quite well, and I do think technicals work exceptionally well in an environment where algorithmic trading and cross-asset trading has replaced individuals. So we all know now that most funds strategies use some type of electronic robotic function within it to work. They exacerbate moves. They create great opportunities. I think it's a very good market for active traders. But I think the general theme, the real money's been made over the last year or two being an investor. And I still think that continues. I think in a low yield environment, you're going to make more money being an investor than you are being a day trader at the moment.
Richard, I have one question for you. You've been in the investment banking industry since 1989. You've been on different trading desks with derivatives, equities. Is there one story or one event that's kind of shaped your trading philosophy or your risk parameters? Something that, you know, stands out in your mind, like something happens in the market, I remember when that happened, I'm not doing that. Anything sticks out in your mind?
That's a great question. No, there are loads and loads of events that shape your mindset. I think I'm quite a bear trader at heart because I've seen most people lose and make most money on bear events. I think most traders can manage a bull market, and it's not hard to make money in a bull market. The skill is to understand when you can actually make money in a bear market. And other people's pain has often been, as Warren Buffett said, the greatest opportunity. It's hard to pick out one event. I've been fortunate to be through a lot of them. But I always believe if it's too good to be true, it is. And if it looks like the world's ending, it isn't. And that kind of has stood you in good stead.
And Richard, I guess a couple more, and then we'll let you get out of here. You said you use technicals. What kind of technical indicators do you use?
Well, that's a tough one. Everyone's got their own favorite. I'm quite a big fan of moving averages, MACDs, volume parameters. I think volume is a big dictator of how you actually look at the performance of a market and the performance of individual shares. I'm not a big fan of overbought, oversold indicators. But I think if you can actually follow a trend, find a trend, spot a trend cross, I think they work very well, especially now that you have a situation where these things are built into the algorithms of the funds and the funds are triggered. So you do see excessive moves on stocks as they break key levels.
And then actually, we're getting a question from someone in our chat here. You used to work at Nomura, and they cover gambling stocks a lot. When you were there, would people ask about those often?
I have to be honest, not an area I covered that closely in Europe.
Okay. All right. Richard Lester, he is the Director of Strategy and Risk at DRS Markets. Rich, thanks so much for coming on. Definitely would love to get you back on. And good luck in this market. I know it's hard, it's hard not to have good luck in this market, but we will definitely be in touch and check back with you in a little bit.
Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
All right. Have a good one.
Cheers, all
right. Now, it's always fun talking to someone across the pond.
Yeah, S&P is just hanging in there, down 5 at 25.48. We're joined by Lauren Thankfulness in the chat. Thanks for joining us here. She was talking about a setup in Apple, and This is what I've been looking at Apple since we've had that break from 165 and change down to 149. You guys don't know, 50% retracement yet, 8 to that. So 157 is my target. Now, it did hit 158, and that was just a blip, and that was on the false Dow Jones rumor. But to me, you know, getting back and holding that 157, that 50% retracement, that's a big level. Not too far away from it now, so not a lot of meat on the bone. But, Lauren, keep an eye on 157 in Apple. That's my number over the next few days.
Let's jump over here. I started to give you imbalances before the guests. I didn't finish. Square is now 67,000 to buy. Alibaba, our buy guy, is still there. 54,000 to buy. And yes, our sell guy is still there in General Electric. 77,000 the shares to sell General Electric. These institutions are good, Joel. I mean, they have had buy imbalances for months in Alibaba. Sell imbalances for, it seems like, months in General Electric. And whoever is doing that is making a lot of money because GE has been straight down, Alibaba has been straight up. There's some money to be made just following these large imbalances in the morning.
Do you
like not even as like, you know, little trades, but as longer term trends?
I mean, we've been talking about that for a long time. Do you scribble them down on your paper, or do you?
I should take a picture of my paper sometime. And if somebody saw this, it just looks like Dr. Chicken scratching everywhere. I probably have like 50 stocks written on it right now, just for today. Just, you know, there's like 50 different symbols written on it, you know, little arrows, little circles. You know, if somebody just looked at this, they wouldn't be able to make heads or tails out of it. But it's kind of logic to me. I've always been somewhat disorganized, but this little paper tells me everything that I want to do today. So, you know, I do take note, you know, and sometimes it's mental notes, but sometimes physical notes of, you know, trends and imbalances as well. And Square has had a trend of buy imbalances for a long time. Alibaba has had a trend of buy imbalances for a long time. And GE has had a trend of sell imbalances for a long time. And those trends have been absolutely correct. So if you just started that a while ago in the, you know, looking at those, you'd been all over these trades. And maybe I should have been taking my own advice on the General Electric, because obviously I still own that in my investment portfolio and it's still beating me up. You know, I've tried to, you know, play it, you know, from a trading perspective along the way, but definitely not making up for my losses on my investment in GE. So, you know, that's been one and funny tweet I just got from How Street Bull. And he just tweeted at me, tweeted an article from me, and Kramer saying on owning GE, Kramer says, "Rarely have I felt this stupid." And he says, Dennis, at least you're not alone. So Kramer's along with me too. Both of us feel pretty stupid for owning GE this long. I'm with you, Kramer.
All right, Dennis, we got to talk about, I mean, it probably wasn't like, you've made some great calls as far as like stocks and directions over time. You've taken a few lunches from me, but you've never come out and said, like a timing thing, like, well, if you're long this HMNY, you just got to be careful if Andrew Luft comes into it.
What a coincidence.
And lo and behold, Andrew, stop listening to our show. I know it's out on the West.
Ace thinks he's listening to our show. Yeah, maybe he is, Ace, because I said it yesterday morning at around 8:20 on the show when HMY was trading up at $33.40, you know, $34 and going parabolic. I said, just be careful of one thing, because this is the kind of stock that Andrew Left likes to pick on. Not even an hour later, Citron comes out with a tweet about HMNY and says it's a $20 stock, and HMNY falls from $38 to under $30. So, you know, obviously, you got to be careful. And Andrew Left, he's the bubble buster. And when you see these bubbles forming and these stocks just going parabolic there, he sometimes comes out. You know, funny coincidence that, you know, I got that one, you know, an hour later that he came out with it. But, you know, impressive, you know, Andrew Left, you know, he moves stocks. So when he comes out and tweets about something that's going down, there's no doubt, you know, the stock's probably going down.
Yeah, there's some wild price action in that. I mean, it actually, they halted it, and then it actually rallied quite a bit after the halt. This is, I'm going to a minute chart here, so that's not going to probably, all right, here's the rally after it came out of the halt. Did hit 23 overnight. Brent and I were looking around on the website of the company yesterday, and it was locking up on us. We couldn't even get to certain parts of it. Because what I want to see is some fundamental information on the company. I know this movie pass is supposed to be, you know, millions and millions of dollars or whatever. Great for the company. But I don't think they've reported in a while. They don't issue like standard quarterly reports, but that's the wild child if you want to be trading Helios and Matheson Analytics. So
there was some news on it overnight as well, and it really got knocked down to $22. The news, Spencer, do you have the details on that? I saw it go by the headline.
Yeah, they added a stake in MoviePass, which is like this thing that all the studios own together. Yeah. Pretty much. So, and it's got a new $9.95 per month subscription fee. So I quite frankly, I don't.
Anyway, the stock was going down on this report there last night. I'm not following the story very closely, so you know, besides the Andrew Left thing, I'm not going to comment, you know, on the specific fundamentals here.
Yeah,
I'll just say, you know, when a stock goes from $3 or $4 up to $35, $40, risk is very high, and funny things can happen, and you know, a tweet can knock it down, an article can knock it down, and you know, watch the stock trade yesterday trade as high as $38 before the bubble buster Andrew Left got on it, and then last night it traded down to the 22 handle. So you're talking, you know, 30, 40% moves within a 24-hour period. Incredible volatility in this HMNY.
Yeah, be careful if you're trading that. All right, 8:53. We got about 7 minutes left. Are the analysts starting to crawl under their desk here, Dennis? We're moving into earnings season, or do we have anybody making some bold calls ahead of reports?
There was a few, and then the same thing, you know, how, you know, many times have we seen Viacom downgraded here in the last week? I'm starting to get bullish. I almost feel like I want to get bullish. You know, this is a stock that, you know, has been in the gutter for a long time. But there's so many analysts getting bearish on it now. I feel like this is almost ready for a reprieve here eventually. But, you know, every other morning we come in and somebody else has downgraded Viacom. So this morning we were getting Viacom downgraded at Guggenheim. I believe yesterday. Was it yesterday's? Spencer, how many days, you know, I think it's like 3 of the last 4 days I've seen downgrades in Viacom. I feel like it's 3 of the last 4.
Right? Well, we had 2 days ago on the 9th, it was Citigroup, and then
they downgraded to sell with a price target of 24.
Yeah, and then that's it. Just that and today.
I thought there was one more, but anyways, it's been, you know, analysts chasing price here. It's classic analysts chasing price. At a certain point in time, valuation does matter here. I mean, this is a stock that's been absolutely annihilated. I don't know. You know, the problem is, you know, social media is eating their lunch. So already other, you know, ways, you know, so traditional media companies are struggling here. So if you're coming in here, you know, you're looking at a multi, how many year low are we at now, Joel? 24.45. I mean, it hasn't been down here since the financial crisis.
Oh, I think, all right, let's go to your monthly chart. It's off the board for me here. This is a monthly. I'm going 20-year, I'm going to have to go back.
20-year low for Viacom right now? Is that right?
Oh, man. How come this is not showing me 20 years
here? I got to go looking, too. I'm going out to – I have my current software is only 10 years. That's not enough. We got to go back here. I thought it might be in the financial crisis that we might have saw low, but I'm going back here to all data, trying to see how far we got to go back. Holy cow. Yeah, no, financial crisis we were. So we did get down into the teens.
$13.
Back to 2009.
Yeah, 13.
Yeah, so we're at an 8-year low here, basically, in Viacom. We're 7-year low. It hasn't been this low since 2009. So I don't know where the buy. I mean, the PE on this thing is 6 now, but, you know, there's problems. Earnings are probably going to be falling here. So that PE goes up. So is this a classic value trap? Well, it has been. It has been for the last 3 or 4 years. So is, you know, there going to be a bounce here eventually? Yes. You know, nothing goes straight down. I just don't know if the story, like, here's one, you know, I'm a classic value trader. So, you know, somebody would say as a value investor, this is one you might want to own. But I feel like this could be a value trap here as well, just because there's so many other ways traditional media, you know, to communicate and to advertise. And, you know, with, you know, not just Twitter, but Facebook. And, you know, there's so many other ways. It's a real uphill battle for Viacom here now. So it's a stock that is on my watch list. I just don't know if I can pull the trigger on it just because they're in trouble here right now.
Lauren's asking about Netflix. I'm not seeing any news on that. I hit that all-time high, 199.40. Let's see what we have going in the pre-market. And my chart's coming up here. Yesterday's close.
I thought there was some analyst commentary. I don't have it in front of me either, but when I was looking this morning, I think I saw some analyst commentary. I'm going to look here this morning.
Dennis, let's talk Kroger's a little bit here. Kroger's had an investor day yesterday, and it had some pretty good trading action, 2203, and then you came down off that level. The halt was just clarification of some kind of number. I know that you thought there's going to be some big news on it. But what Kroger announced and why this thing got a pop is they're selling their convenience stores. And I think they have 800.
I didn't even know they own convenience stores.
Yeah, either I. But, man, oh, man, I mean, the street's construing this as bullish. I mean, you're selling assets. I mean, I just can't look at it that way.
Was this yesterday's news? What there's been multiple headlines here in the last couple of days. What was the news yesterday morning on Kroger that drove it up? Was it just that convenience? I thought they had some guidance or something.
Well, no, they were clarifying their previously issued guidance is basically
okay. And that was okay, that guidance. So that was the reason.
Yeah, it was fine.
And that was the reason we got up to 2203. And, you know, we're up here this morning. There was some positive commentary, I believe, in Kroger as well. I don't think it was an analyst train, but UBS reiterated their $24 price target, I believe,
and,
on it.
And
so,
Stevens and Company upgraded it to equal.
Stevens upgraded it. So that's why we're trading up here slightly in the pre-market there. But this chart is ugly. I mean, you got murdered. It's come back up a little bit. You know, now it's leaking here again. It's been an ugly story here for Kroger for a long time. I will say the $20 has given you support for all the last month. So as long as it can hold above $20, even that low at 1969, you know, you can try it. But it's not a good sign when a stock pops 5% like it did yesterday and can't even hold the gains for a day. You know, that's just telling you there is just overhead supply, people who have been murdered on this thing. And they may not be done yet. I mean, those sellers are not done. They haven't capitulated out of it yet. And that makes me think the path of least resistance is still lower for Kroger, believe it or not. That's what I think.
At $22, that's the level. That's what you hit yesterday. You had a high of 22.03. Also had a high after the earnings report at 22.08. So maybe just try and buy this thing on strength. Gets above 22, holds 22. You're looking at a swing trade. You stop out at the low of the move. But it's funny how, you know, if you take that kind of strategy and said, okay, I'm going to try and buy this at 20.5 and then, you know, stop myself out at 1969, sometimes it can really keep you out of a stock if you say, okay, you know, if it clears 22, holds 22, you know, buying it on strength. So that would be my strategy for
this. Doesn't hold, though. I mean, how can you really get bullish a stock when it can't hold the gains for one day?
No, I'm saying if it gets above and holds 22 for a couple of days, buying it on strength. All right, Dennis, any quick change in imbalances here? We got a minute left.
G is now 175,000 a sell. AT&T, which has been hit all morning here, 108,000 a sell. Verizon and Sympathy is down significantly as well, 60,000 a sell in Verizon. Johnson & Johnson, 42,000 a sell. That J&J move yesterday was absolutely incredible. I did not think it was going to have the gas go as high as it did there yesterday. I actually got up and challenged, believe it or not, almost kissed it right on the button. It's all-time high. I'm just looking here, 137. We got up to, then we got up to 137.08. And then yesterday, we kissed it, 137.08. So we kissed the all-time high here in Johnson & Johnson just, you know, a few weeks after Goldman had downgraded, obviously. J&J is back up here at all-time highs here again, right near it.
You want to talk about a fade here. Goldman did that downgrade. Not only downgraded, they downgraded to a sell. And that was on, boom, 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 Goldman Sachs. That was on September 20th. And I don't know, have you gone up every, no, you had a.
It went down for a while after that.
Yeah, so now you're on a 9-day winning streak. Let's see what happens at 137. All right, Spencer.
I mean, there's a lot of these traditional stocks. Look at Mickey D's yesterday. You know, McDonald's broke out to all-time highs there too. I mean, you have a lot of, you know, these are, big companies here that, you know, have, you know, not really a lot of growth in their earnings, but these are stocks that are getting bought here too. It just shows you the strength of you know, and the breadth of this rally here when you get stocks like Johnson & Johnson, McDonald's making all-time highs. I mean, Mickey D's is back here again too. You've had a long consolidation period. It broke out here again now. Sure looks bullish.
I just wanted to clarify real quick, thanks, Brent, that Kroger, they didn't say they were selling their convenience stores. They're just exploring strategic alternatives for their stores. So it could mean they're selling those stores. It could also mean they're doing nothing. But anyway, that's just wanted to clarify that. That's it for our show today, though. We had a busy one. Hope we got to all your questions. I hope we answered everything. If not, stick around in the chat. I'll be in there. Joel will be in there. trying to be in there more throughout the day going forward. If you want to catch the whole show again, you can do that on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, or by going to youtube.com/BenzingaTV. It's our YouTube channel where the show airs live every day, and you can rewatch it there as well. As far as tomorrow's show, two guests for you again, William Studebaker and Gary Kaltbaum will join the show for our final show of the week. But that's it for us today, folks. Have a good one. Good luck out there, and we'll be back with you on Friday.